An interview with Jeremy Schiedinger today on the Ultimate Ground Rules.
But I have raised you up for this very purpose, that I might show you my power, and that my name might be proclaimed in all the earth.
Welcome to The Ultimate Ground Rules, a podcast built specifically to encourage, empower, and strengthen the faith of coaches as they live out their God-given purpose to develop the next generation of leaders. And now, your host, Dave Pritchard.
Hello and welcome to The Ultimate Ground Rules. I am your host, Dave Pritchard. As always, thanks for checking out the show today. If you're encouraged by what you hear, please take a moment to like, share, and subscribe to the show. Or even better, take a moment and leave a review, as it helps others find this show. Now, my goal is to encourage coaches. And the more this show can reach, the more players we together can positively impact. Today, it's a unique day for me. All throughout my playing career, I was a spray hitter who took advantage of my legs. But today's a little different, because I finally feel like I've hit a home run. I recently sat down with Coach Jeremy Schiedinger of Georgia Gwinnett College. Now, most of you probably know him through his previous work in the ABCA, or even through his podcast called Dugout Chatter. He was gracious enough to take a moment out of his busy schedule, and as always, he did not disappoint. Throughout our time together, it's clear that he is player-driven and attempts to approach every day with a servant's heart, while taking advantage of everything that life throws his way. Now, there's something in this episode for everyone, so grab your pen and paper as the Ultimate Ground Rules presents Coach Jeremy Schiedinger. All right, guys, I'm here today with Jeremy Schiedinger. Don't really feel like he even needs an introduction. Some people call him the godfather of baseball. You know, most guys know you. You were working with ABCA. Now you just got back into coaching at Georgia Gwinnett. Mm-hmm. Also hosted Dugout Chatter on Stick and Ball TV. So if you're not checking that out, please do. Thanks for coming on the show.
I cannot thank you enough, Dave, for having me on. I'm obviously a huge fan of you and our relationship and friendship through ABCA and beyond. And I'm excited to do this, man. I'm looking forward to a fantastic conversation. Thanks again for having me on.
Yeah, we'll have a good time. I know the point of this show basically is just I want to encourage coaches. Mm-hmm. And really, you know, it was born out of, especially on the high school level, just a frustration of watching coaches have a 3 to 4 year lifespan and get out of it.
Sure.
You know, and so I want to try to avoid that as much as possible because that's not good for the player. It's not good for the player, the school, the community. Mm-hmm. And so just want to encourage people. So hopefully, you know, we can accomplish that today. Just sure. Encourage some guys, maybe even some young guys out there. And of course, this show is faith-based. So centered around that. So we'll kick it off with, you know, how does your faith shape you as a coach? What you do?
Oh, man. Well, you know, this is new for me. This is, for those of you who don't know, I spent my first 11 years out of college coaching and across all levels as an NAI assistant for a few years. I was a D1 assistant, D2 assistant, and then a Division III head coach. Then I got out for 4 years and got out of the game. And in the course of that, you know, had two kids, got married, and honestly was put into a kind of a servant leadership role at ABCA where it really worked on my heart. And I think more than that, Dave, back to your question, it really helped me understand how important my walk with God needed to be in my life. And I think before in 11 years, I talked about faith and I brought it up and, you know, it's almost both sides of the mouth. Hey, you know, I'm a man of faith, but then I'm going to dog cuss you to death over here. And you can't, and not that you can't do, you know, but you got to be cognizant of your actions are speaking much louder to these kids than just your words. And so you got to be willing to talk it, but then you've got to walk it because they're paying attention to both. And so when it comes back to like now with my faith, I am working very diligently to be back into a competitive place for me, which back in the day, man, would take me down a different path. It's certainly steering further away from faith and now drawing more closely to it and knowing, and again, I can go through the history of me getting to Georgia Gwinnett, but I mean, that whole process was such a, you know, setting of concrete in faith of trusting God's plan for me that, hey, if this is meant to happen, man, I'm going to give it up to you. And for me, as a stubborn control freak that thinks I have a hand in everything, to give up that process of career move at 38, I gave that up and completely put my faith in his path for me. And it's revitalized me, man. I certainly have this awareness now. I think really rooted in that faith of being cognizant of every happening, every conversation, every phone call, every passing comment. I really feel like all these things are working for me, and I'm trying to have that awareness because I am trying to put so much trust into God and his plan. And so every interaction with the player for me, it just rings much different than it did 5 years ago, let alone, 16 years ago. And so again, I'm really working hard to keep that at the forefront. And last thing I'll say is this, I do work at a state school, and I am very cognizant that a state school runs much different than the private ones that I've worked at in the past. And so I also have to toe that line at being a state school coach, but I'm encouraged. I have several players who walk very closely as well. And I'm always encouraged by them. They encourage me to, coach, it's okay to step across that line. It's okay to, I think, again, being who you are, we talk about being yourself, coach, you got to be who you are. And at times, I cross over and I make sure that it's known, but certainly being very cognizant that each player is at his own place in life. And so, again, back to walking the walk and talking the talk, I want to make sure that I'm as consistent as I can be. I never fall over, work hard to not fall over the other side of that, but also trying to meet them where they are. And hopefully through my walk, I get a chance to influence them.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe just as an encouragement, I'm a public high school, so I totally get what you're saying.
Yeah.
And just as an encouragement, maybe to some other guys in that same situation, I know that, I have a few players very similar, and I use them as a tool, to be honest with you. If there's something that I want to get across the team, or if I want the door to be open, so to speak, I can use those guys to pry it open, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. Yeah. We've, this is one of the first times in our program that we've really been inclusive with our, it was an FCA chapter, and now it's got a little different name, but making that at the forefront of what we do and making our players know how, how that should be, part of what we do. And again, we've got this group of guys, I think there's like 12 of them, that they go to church together, they go to the college service at 12 Stones real close here. They go every Thursday. And it's just really encouraging to know. And for me as a coach, for the first time, I mentioned this a couple weeks ago on our show, one of our players invited me to church. And it was the first time that had ever happened. And then it was the first time that certainly I ever said yes. And that I went, and I was, again, the oldest guy in the room, but it was a lot of fun to sit there in a row with my players, and how much I love and revere these guys, but I got a chance to worship with them and take in a lesson, sitting shoulder to shoulder with them. So it's changing the whole dynamic for me. I know we'll get into this a little bit later, but just looking at them much differently, looking at them as coaching them as people first. And if you're really coaching people, then you've got to be cognizant of all the various aspects that make up the physical end, the emotional piece, the spiritual piece, and you gotta be willing to kind of, keep a pulse on all of them so that you're building a more well-rounded person. If I have a more well-rounded person, it's going to be much easier for me to coach that player, and never blurring the lines in that relationship. And I'm telling you, man, the devil works on me every day with that. There's times where I can feel my gut, my heart wanting to really think about the player, and I just have to push it back to, no, man, this is a person, someone's son. And I've been charged with managing this person's son. And it's my job as his stepdad to really help him out and help build him up. And I got to continue to be better at it. And I will. But it's a struggle, man, but you work through it. Again, back to having faith in God's plan.
Absolutely. So as you're working through that stuff, is there any scriptures that you kind of cling to?
Yeah. And I hope this doesn't, come cliche, but I'm telling you, it's one that I actually reference a lot in our classroom, and it's one that hits me a lot. It's Proverbs 27:17, is iron sharpens iron. And I think about that a lot because I think that's, for me, it's more relative to what I just came out of at ABCA, where it was, as we were talking before we hit the record button, like helping others understand that we can all challenge each other. There can be a healthy relationship of, because of something we're doing, Dave, your podcast, because of the message inside this, it's going to grind on a listener. And because of that, Dave, you're sharpening that other person. You're helping him, become a better man because of your messaging. And you think about that with your players. And I think about that a lot. I think that, as much as I want to, as the head coach, I want to influence them, and I want to, obviously challenge them, but I want to mold them into better versions of themselves. I want them to be prepared when they leave our program to go not just work for a company. I want them to go run a company. So with that, you bring the spirit that my job is to sharpen you up. And at the same time, I say all that, and I say this a lot to them. I go, man, as much as we think we're coaching this thing, man, you guys are sharpening me every day, because I know I can't walk into classroom unprepared. And I know I got to show up when it's time to do middle game. And I know when we get to whatever that moment in the game, I know I got to show up, and you are sharpening me. You're bringing out the best version of me. So as much as I work at serving our kids and I work at being prepared for them, man, because of them, they are sharpening me. And so I really do. That's one that I hold on to pretty closely.
Looking back at your journey, your whole journey, mm-hmm. as a player, yep. and maybe even your journey as a coach, what do you remember about coaches you had? Is there anything that you remember, I don't want to be that guy, or man, that was awesome. Yeah. And I want to bring that to the table. What stands out to you?
How much time do you got? and I would not want this tone to be negative, but I have a lot of instances that I look at, and I embrace all of them. I think the entire journey, in all its twists and turns, and at times it looked broken, and man, there's so many. I embrace all of it because all of it has gotten me to this point. And so, yes, there are coaches that, man, were huge for me, and guys that I'm grateful that I had the chance to play under or work with, and they teach you the things to do. They teach you how to handle certain situations. I go back to Ryan Brisbane, who's head coach at Shriner University, who is not only one of the best people I've ever been around. He got me at a time I really needed some guidance. I needed someone on a lot of different fronts to be there and push me and motivate me and support me. And that's who he was. And I thank God for him. I think and a lot of happenings got him to that place where I was at. But I think of those moments a lot. I think of Alan Cox, who's now my hitting coach here at Georgia Gwinnett. I had him my senior year at Kentucky Wesleyan, and one of the best hitting coaches I've ever been around. But then he just became a friend, and then became a mentor, and he mentors me to this day. He's constantly, especially now he's on our staff here at GGC. He's working on me every day. I just got off the phone yesterday on our way to go play our game. I called my high school assistant coach, David Kamak, who I had at 16 years old. And he's still a guy that, again, I call today, and I don't hang up the phone without telling him that I love him. I mean, when you go back to those individuals, man, I always do this, man. I always talk about my little league coach, Bud Ritchie. So at 12 years old, he took a chubby white kid that thought he was going to play in the NBA because he's a Kentucky boy and everybody's got a basketball hoop. And he just showed me that there's a different view of this game that I didn't know. And he taught me so much about baseball. It literally changed the trajectory of my life. I've followed baseball, and now I live in the baseball space because of Bud Ritchie. And so there's all those individuals that you point to, but yeah, no, the other side of that coin is that there are coaches that didn't do it the right way. But those lessons of what not to do have at times been invaluable. I without obviously putting anyone on blast or throwing shade at anybody, I've played for a coach that got a job very young, and he drank with our team. And, you know, so I've been through that. I've been through a coach that, you know, I went to this situation and, hey, I really want to coach college baseball. I want to work for someone that can groom me as a player and help prepare me for coaching. And then my senior year can really help me land a coaching position. I mean, I really want that for this. And that all wasn't true. You know, an individual, hey man, you're going to run the offense. It's going to be all yours, man. I'm going to stay out completely out of your way. And then game one, now I'm completely involved. And it's like, well, wait a minute. And you go back to all those moments, and it only helps me now because I'm willing to, and we talked about this in classroom about a week ago, Dave, all those moments have helped me through the course of my life, write my story. Cause we all have a story and we're the narrator, and the way that we view all those things happening helps really curate, but more importantly helps mold how those experiences are shaped. And again, they will affect how we handle the person in front of us. And so I think what we talked about and what I think about a lot with those, Dave, especially when you hit me with that question, is can you go back and accept responsibility inside those? Sometimes it's unwarranted and sometimes it's not fair to do that. But we do all play a role. You play a role with those negative experiences, whether it was, you know, a high school coach that didn't treat you the right way. And I mean, his heart went in the right place, but man, you had a hand in some points. You could have done a little bit more. You could have done something a little bit different. I always go back to those moments and think, man, I could have said something. I could have, you know, challenged him. I could have done a lot. And so, but more importantly, the point, back to the point, is I accept all those for what they are. And, you know, again, I think they all play a role. And so anyone out there listening, it's so easy to, as a college recruiter, you meet the high school kid and he wants to tell you right away about how he's been screwed all his life. And you just, you know, and as it was his little league coach, then it was his Babe Ruth coach. Now it's his high school coach, and then it's his travel coach, and then it's going to be you if you recruit him. And you just want to grab him and go, hey, man, understand that you can change that story right now. You can literally flip that script on its head and, not, again, accept responsibility within it where it's needed. But more than that, you're not a victim. And so I look at all those points and go, I'm not a victim of those things. Thank God that I coached for a guy, or, you know, I played for a guy like that, because he has shown me the playbook that I know that I've got to keep closed and I've got to keep it buried in the back of my bookcase. You know, it's the one I don't need to ever open up for guidance, but I've at least read it and I know what's in there and I know it's not good. And that helps you. I mean, you think about those things a lot, especially when it comes to adversity or those moments in your dugout or within your locker room. You think about those and you go, yeah, I've seen it handled that way, and that won't work. So I'm going to do this. I'm going to go back to the guys that really helped me and follow their plan. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. And maybe you answered my next question already, but I was going to ask, you know, as the recruiter, or as you interact with these young men, mm-hmm. and you're looking to bring them into your program, and you just looking at social media and the whole cultural landscape. I mean, the easy answer, I mean, we all know what guys need from a baseball standpoint, but as you're bringing guys in and just interacting with them, what do you think players need most from a coach in 2020?
Oh, that's a good question. I think number one, they need trust. They need someone they can trust, and they need that person to show them that they can be trusted. And that's really relative for what we're doing at GGC, in terms of that has been my main focus from day one. I want our players to know they can trust me. And you do that again by walking it each day. And so this is, I'm going to be consistent. I'm going to be myself. I'm going to be a man of my word. When I tell you something's going to happen, it's going to happen. When I come, you know, hey, this is what we're going to do, this is what we're going to do. Those things aren't taken for granted by today's player, I think, because, you know, we, as many of us know, we're coaching the most informed player we've ever coached in the history of baseball. this is the most informed, connected player we've ever coached. And again, as I referenced earlier, the conversation with my high school coach, you know, he's like, man, I see how the game has really passed me up. You know, back in the day, I could tell you, hey, this is how we take ground balls. And he goes, what were you going to judge that against? There was no Google. There wasn't, you know, YouTube. There wasn't Twitter. And so the way that we were taught was the way is what you knew. And when the coach said jump, you just jumped. And now you get to a place where it's like, hey, I need you to jump. Well, why? Because I've got a pretty good base of information I've studied on YouTube or Twitter or whatever it might be. And so it's an informed place. So they want trust. I think the other piece that they need, and they may not think that they need it, Dave, but they certainly do. I think as coaches, you know, and this may border on tough love, and hopefully it, maybe it does, but they need someone in their life that will shoot them straight. And I read a great quote about 2 weeks ago about really how to deliver some of that. And basically what it came down to is if you think that you can speak to players and just be black and white with a cutthroat tone, that just makes you a jerk. You've got to be willing to get to the point, but you better carry tact with you, because you can turn them off really quick. They need someone that'll shoot them straight. And again, this is something we talk about with our kids a lot. As a coach, as your head coach, I may be the only person in your life, maybe based on the dynamics, that'll shoot you straight. And you got to remember, man, you got kids that have come from divorced families. They've had illnesses, then maybe they've lost a parent. Who knows? Maybe they were abused when they were younger. They come from a variety of backgrounds. And then their family, just like any great family, figures out a dynamic that keeps that person on track. And sometimes it's coddling. Sometimes it's, eliminating failure opportunities. And so trying to protect them and umbrella them. You got all those various dynamics. Well, then you as the head coach, myself as the college head coach, I may be the one person in their life that gets to shoot them straight. And because of we've built a platform of trust, and because, again, I work hard at carrying tact with me in those moments, it's certainly never demeaning, but we try to create a learning environment. And so I know that I'm going to call you out in front of the team on this moment, but what I've built is a platform of trust to do it from. What you know about me is that I love you to my core, and no coach has loved you the way that I'm loving you. I can get on you at a 10, but I'm loving you at a 20. And so I can shoot you straight and do it in a creative way, do it in a learning way. And yes, at times it's going to get to anger with some of those. Okay. But we had an instance a couple weeks ago, Dave. I got on a player in front of our team, and it was a moment that we all needed to learn from, and he got angry and he got upset. And then 2 days later, he's hugging me and crying. Coach, I just can't believe I disrespected you like that. I'm so sorry. Hey man, hey, that's part of growing up, man. That was a great learning opportunity for me, for our team, for you. But we do that because we love you. We do it because that needed to be said, and you're a better man because of it. And guess what? That kid has been on fire since. And so I think kids need that. We as coaches, you know, again, you got to carry tact with you, but you got to be willing to be the person that will make sure they understand what's right and wrong and what can be accepted and what can't be, and what, as you probably do a great job of, Dave, what carries into life and then what doesn't. You know, you can make every excuse that you want, but I promise you, when you're 25 and you got to turn a project into your boss, excuses don't work. You know, like, so you've got to help them understand that there's a point where you start to move past those things and get into, again, acceptance of responsibility and what true accountability means. You got to be willing to confront really uncomfortable conversations. We've got to help them through that. We may be the one person in their life that helps them understand that just because it's uncomfortable doesn't mean you avoid it. It actually means you walk right towards it, because there's growth. You will come out the other side a better person, and so will the other teammate that you're going to confront or coach. So anyways, I think there's those dynamics that we can't, and I'm not challenging anyone. Listen, I'm saying this as a reminder to myself. We have to recognize those things are real. And for us as a coach, we may be the only person in their life that can be that for them. Go back to this, man. Go back to a couple years ago. Coach Garrido spoke at the ABCA convention, and another coach referenced this to me a couple weeks ago, and it's ringing in my ears that at no time in the world are coaches needed now more than ever. We're needed to be leaders. We're needed to bring tough love. We're needed to bring love. We're needed to bring support. We're needed to bring realness. We're needed to bring perspective. Like, at no point in the history of sports have coaches been more needed than they are right now. But with that comes immense responsibility. It's not just to put the words on the back of a t-shirt, or Dave, back when, you know, we were playing, our coach, you know, stitched it in on his nice polo right above his pocket on the front of his shirt. Like, it's more than that. It's so much more. It's mentor, it's leader, it's life coach. It's all those things, man, because that's what they need right now. They don't need just a baseball guru. They need someone to help them through life.
Absolutely.
You got me fired up on that one, buddy. I'm sorry. I have to go on a tangent.
I'm just sitting here thinking, I don't want to overplay my hand or put too much pressure on somebody, but I mean, you're talking about generational impact.
You know, that goes 100%
beyond the player in front of you.
Dude, you talk about taking on responsibility. This is the thing. This is where my mind goes every day. Because they're in our program, we are affecting the way that I hope positively influences the way they treat their girlfriend right now. And then in 5, 6, 7 years, the way they treat their wife. And in 10, 12 years, the way they are a father to their son or their daughter. And ultimately, you know, you have to go there. That's where it's heading. It's, you can't coach for tomorrow's game. You can't try to win the district championship and think that that's the end all be all, dude. They're with us for a short amount of time. I love my kids to death. I will, you know, we're graduating 5 seniors this year, and my heart will ache because we're going to lose some of the very best people. You get me crying right now. Like, some of the best people I've ever spent time with. And if I, after 1 year, can't look them in the eye and say, man, because of your experience this year, and hopefully because some of the things that we got to teach you, it's made you better and you feel prepared. And man, what we could have done with 4 years, but you know what? I also am not quitting after one. I'm here for the rest of your life. I'm here when you go get your job. I'm here when you go for your first interview. I'm here when you need to update your resume. I'm here when you do pop the question. I'm here for your bachelor party. I'm here for, you know, like, you've got to think in long terms. And I think that's what keeps you grounded. But also, and this is, take this for what it's worth, man, dude, like, you know, we won a quote unquote big game last night. Dude, that game means nothing. And I don't say that to be like dismissive. I say that because it ain't about right. Baseball, homie. Like, it ain't about the game. The game was just the vehicle that allowed us to get off the bus and they get to do what they do. But then the messaging after the game had nothing to do with turning double plays. And the message in classroom today had nothing to do with backside ground balls. It's just recognition that we have a responsibility to impact them on a much deeper level. And if you're just touching the baseball piece, man, you are literally going a mile wide and an inch deep. And that is really at our fault. And we've got to be much better at going, you know, an inch wide and a mile deep with these guys. Cause this is what we're doing. This is what our job entails.
Yeah, absolutely. You're the pro. And so I think you might've answered my question here before I even asked it, but
you got me so fired up, man. I didn't know I was going to go there, but I appreciate
it. You saying I've got trust, truth, and I've got time down as you are building the relationship over time. But how do you walk the fine line? And maybe this is a little more difficult at 16 years old as opposed to 20, but I don't think so. But how do you walk that fine line of, I'm invested in you, you know, I love you, and I'm trying to build you as a person. And how do I get you to understand that when I can only play 9? That's a tough
question. That's the ultimate struggle. Yeah, it is. Ultimate struggle as a coach. I had a conversation with a coach a few weeks ago, and he said, or DM or an email or a text or something. I'm sorry, but go back. It was last week, and it was John McCormick from Florida Atlantic. So talk about a dude that coaches for the right reasons. And he said, hey, man, listen to your podcast with Butch Thompson. It's awesome, man. It really challenged me. And he goes, you need to do a podcast with a coach that will talk through, hey, you can love on them as much as you want. You're going to coach a player that doesn't want that love from you. And as much as I like to, you know, live on warm and fuzzy and try to live in this, you know, my glass isn't half full or half empty. My glass is overflowing. So I try to live that every day. I'm likely coaching one right now that, yeah, I mean, you look in his eyes and it ain't there, man. And, you know, I go back to this, man, and you may have heard me say this before. I go back to the laws of 25%. And this may sound coarse, but I think when you know inherently as a human that we crave acceptance, like we go make friends on the playground, and it kills us at five when that little girl won't jump on the swing with you, or that little boy bullies you or makes fun of you. Like, it kills you. Well, that's the same for a 38-year-old. Like, if I meet someone and I can tell that there's no vibe there, there's a part of me that's like, well, come on, man. I'm pretty cool. Like, I'm a pretty nice guy. I came at you really positive. Like, well, you can't get down with me. But the laws of 25%, to me, I try to apply that to the player perspective, is that 25% of the people you meet in life will be on your team from day one. The minute they meet you, there's something there. There's an instant connection. And no matter what you do, no matter when you fall off or you say something or do something, man, those people will always be in your corner. Those are the strongest 25%. You also have 25% of people you'll meet in life that'll be in your corner from day one. There's an instant connection. They're with you. But because you do something or say something, or because the relationship fades away, they may not be on your team for the rest of your life. 25% of the people you meet in life will not like you at first, but because of the way you go about your business, because there's a connection piece at some point, those people can be turned to join your team. And 25% of the people you meet in life will not like you from the start. And no matter what you do, say, no matter what, they will not be on your team. And again, that can sound coarse, but you have to know that not only will not every player understand where you're coming from. Let me back up. Will not understand who you are. Will not understand at your core what your mission in coaching is. You have to know that 25% of the kids you coach will not get it. That 25% at may not ever come to understand that throughout the course of the time that you'll have to coach them, that they'll be on your team. But beyond that, Dave, as you well know, I mean, you've coached a lot, heck of a lot longer than I have. There's just, to me, this whole idea of understanding or things clicking, or, hey, that's when they got it, you know, quote unquote, it's when they get it. That happens at different times. It's like recruiting. You have a 14-year-old right now that's committed to Vanderbilt, and then a 15-year-old's being recruited by these schools, and a 16-year-old, and then you have an 18-year-old senior that hasn't found a place to play yet. To me, that recruiting timeline is the same as the timeline when players get it. And so I try to take a little solace in that, and with a little bit of the umbrella of the 25%, knowing that, again, right now I know two players in particular on the team I'm coaching right now. I don't know where I'm at with them. As much as I try to talk to them, I haven't been able to like cut into the core of who they are. And so part of, I look at them and I'm going, I don't think he gets it. Or I don't think he trusts me. Or I don't think he enjoys playing for me. And you know what? I do spend time thinking about it, and I am going to work at, but at the same time, I'm going to go, if it falls into 25%, bro, there's another dude out there that's ready to roll. So I think as a high school coach, it's hard because you're handed a deck of cards, and you've got to figure out how to shuffle them up and put them in the right places. You brought up, oh man. And you brought up the one of the biggest things is playing time. And sometimes the player equates the relationship to the opportunity to play. And you know, I'll say this, I felt like before we started playing games, this is the most close-knit team I've ever coached. And I still, man, this team is we're pretty tight. I mean, it is a fun environment to be in. But I'd be lying if I told you that with certain players, I felt a shift once we started putting lineup cards up. In the dynamic, and just in, maybe that's me, maybe wanting to see something. But I take a lot of pride in my feel for people and in my pulse on things, and I can feel the dynamic shift because look, now it's real. Now, you know, all the warm and fuzzies and the hugs and the loves, all that's real because there's nine dudes up there on that board. And then you as a coach, you're trying to manage your way through opportunities and how to get guys rolling, and he's getting cold, so let's get this guy in, and you're trying to manage that. But look, I mean, I think at the end of the day, I mentioned this to one player in particular. Hey man, if you want to go down that negative road, then that just shows me our relationship wasn't what I thought it was. Like, that's just real. And so I know it's tough as a 16-year-old to understand, but I go back to what we talked about a minute as a coach. Like, as a coach, you have to explain that. You have to talk them through that dynamic that, hey man, remember we were close and you told me you love me. And remember, like we had something pretty cool. Now what's changed? Oh, because there's a lineup card and you're not getting the at bats that you want. Well, again, remember when we've had these conversations, I've told you, you're the backup, or, hey man, you're going to have, you know, short, you know, not as many opportunities as the guy in front of you. That's just the way this dynamic rolls out. It's tough, man. I can't, there's no good answer for it, but I just go back to, again, a lot of the, you're not going to catch them all at the same time. You're not going to catch them all in those moments where, you know, you're the man in their eyes. You're not going to catch them where they get it. But you keep coaching through it and you keep creatively finding different ways to hit them. And, you know, sometimes I give messages in our classroom, and as much as I'm giving them to the team, I'm really giving them to three right. people. And I'm speaking through this message to them. And it's something that I got guys in the room going, yeah, coach, we got that. And like, yeah. But these three really need to hear it. Like, and so I'm going to say it again, and I'm gonna make sure that it's apparent that, this matters. And you know, go back to control. We talked about control today, Dave. We talked about controlling the controllables. As simple as that is, man, we're 11 games in. We still got to think about and talk about, and they still have to work at, and I still have to work at controlling the controllables. Well, guess what? As a player, playing time's not in your control. It's just not. Like, it's my decision. And so you have to work to influence the way that I view you as a player. That is in your control. But in terms of how I interpret that and I see that it meshes against the other players in our program, it's just not in your control. What you can control is when you go check the board and your name's not up there. Don't think I'm not watching the way that you walk back. Don't think that I'm not watching the way that you are during the game. Don't think that I'm not listening for your voice when the player in front of you is hitting. Like, those are the things you control. And with that shows me where you're at, your buy-in level, your care level, your trust, your zeal for the player in front of you. That all is part of the factors that go into not only the building the relationship, but more the dynamic of, again, cracking the lineup. So a long way to get back to, I think it's a tough road to navigate, but I think those things for me come to light every day.
Yeah, absolutely. And it causes me to, you know, remember your why. It comes back to remember your why. And then, mm-hmm. you know, if I put my pastor hat on, you know, if you look at a lot of the minor prophets in the Old Testament, Jeremiah stands out to me, but, you know, God told Jeremiah, listen, this is what I want you to go tell Israel. And, oh, by the way, they're not going to listen. But you're still supposed to tell them. You know.
Oh, so, man.
I mean, if I feel like this is what I'm called to do, if you're a coach that feels like this is what you're called to do, yeah, they may not all get it, but it's not because you didn't have every opportunity over a four-year span to get it. You know.
And to your point, they're not going to listen, or they may not get it. They may not get it right now. They might get it at 20. You've done this for so much longer. You've had a kid come back from 2 years of college. You know, he goes off to, you know, Motlow State and goes for 2 years. Now he's over at UT, and he comes back some fall or some winter basketball game. And he finds you and he goes, coach, man, I just want to thank you for everything you did for me. And you're looking at him going, brother, I didn't see this conversation happening 2 years ago. Like, and you've had one for everyone that's done it at 20. There's been one that's done it at 25. There's one that's done it at 30. there's one that's done it at 30 and he hasn't called you yet. So like, you just don't know when it's going to hit him. And you just hope that in the course of the way that you go about your business, man, you're imprinting on them a positive relationship, whether they see it at 18 as positive or not. You know, again, as direct as we are with our guys, there's certainly a guy in our room that thinks, man, it's pretty coarse. But I hope that maybe by 22, could be by 25, maybe by 45, they go, but you know what? For a coach in my life, man, that dude was crystal clear. I knew where I stood at all times. And if I didn't, it's because I was afraid to ask the question.
You know, just following you, you know, I see the videos, by the way, awesome videos pregame. I've seen you guys, you know, really buy into the mental stuff. And then you're talking about the classroom. But as coaches are listening, you know, what are some other things you think maybe that you guys do that are unique that you use to try to reach your players?
That's good. Well, just to rehash, I really do. I think the classroom is a huge piece, and I've had some really cool people reach out and say that they do almost a variation of that. I had the guy at Tocoa Falls, Justin, who is just, I think, is a rock star, man. He's such a smart coach. Great interview that we had. But he mentioned that they do a classroom, and he goes, it's almost inconvenient because it's on the other side of campus. But it's so important that I have that touch point. I think as a coach, think through the way that we learned, you know, the way that, you know, you whether you sat in the dugout or you jumped out in the middle of the drill and coach explained it, that may not be the way that our guys interpret or learn or can understand what's getting ready to happen. And so what I like about the classroom is you can draw up what you're going to do in that drill. You can almost teach it before you have to do it. And you can do it in an environment that feels to them like a learning environment that they're used to, which is the classroom. So I love that touch point with our guys. We do it every single day. We do it at 1:30 every single day. And again, it's consistency, but it, you know, sometimes like today we talked about fundraising, and then get into the lesson plan and then talked about our next 10 game, strategy. So just, you know, it's a way to kind of mold all those things into one touch point every day with your team before you go train. You know where I'm at on mental game stuff. If we say the game's 90, 95, 99% mental, then where's it at on your practice plan? And so that's something that I think has not only built consistency with our guys, but it shows up in the game. I think when big moments happen, we're able to slow down. We're able to get back to our breath. We have players, and I'm working on as a coach, when you're able to move past things that have happened, you know, the previous at bat and you struck out, if you're thinking about that at bat and your next at bat, that just shows you have mental game work to do. You've got to be willing to look back and go, I'm going to learn from that at bat and I'm better because now I have this knowledge in this at bat, but I don't control that one. And I don't control my fourth one. I control this third one right now, this pitch. It also allows us to do some affirmations with our guys. I think inherently we're trying to build confident people. We're trying to build competitive people. We're trying to build players and people that have awareness that the decision to have a good attitude starts with them. The decision to come to train and want to learn and want to get better, that starts with them. And so trying to build some accountability and some responsibility in that. Some other stuff we do that I really like, and you've heard me talk about this, is hero highlight hardship. I think if there's any coach, and again, we do it in our classroom, it's such a fun exercise. And I've had some people reach out for some details on it. It's very simple, and you can choose one player a day. You could do, hey, these three players, we're going to do it on Fridays. You can, as many as you want, but they stand up and they go through a hero in their life. They go through a highlight, you know, a highlight they always come back to that they're really proud of, and a hardship they've been through. And as a coach, you kind of prod them to get into the details. Why is this person your hero? What are some things that they've done that really stand out to you as your hero of your life? The highlight, why is that such a big moment? What are the dynamics that make that so important to you? The hardship, take us through as much as you're willing to share in the hardship that you would point to. And you know, I'm very proud to say, man, 36 players and four coaches, and almost all of us have cried. And it's just, it's a fun, vulnerable place to be, but that's what's brought this team together, is we all know where we're all coming from, and we all have unique, you know, backgrounds and stories and experiences that make us who we are. So I love that dynamic. And I think the other thing, Dave, I'll share is this. I'm not saying it works for everybody. And in a month, I could tell you that it was the wrong move. In a year, I could tell you I'll do it different. But with this new group, you know, I took over a program that, you know, they had been winning. Winning is not new for this crew. They've averaged 47 wins a year over 7 years. They've been to 3 World Series in 7 years. We've put a lot of kids into professional baseball. Like, a lot of talents come through GGC. But I thought what would be different is trying to set for them some expectations. And so what are our program expectations of behavior, of mentality, of, you know, when I give something, when we give something as a coaching staff, like that, you have to take responsibility there. And I will come back to you and let you know whether or not you're doing a great job with it. But honestly, Dave, I haven't given them one rule. And I know that sounds kind of, I don't know, some coach just cringed when I said that, but I haven't given them one rule. There's nothing that anyone can point to and say, oh yeah, when we do that, that happens. Nope. But there's an expectation, because championship teams operate on a certain level. And, you know, when it comes to Friday nights and it comes to Saturday nights, and you got to be a college kid, and sometimes you're going to make some good decisions, sometimes you're going to make bad decisions. But anything that affects what we're trying to do on the baseball field is a bad decision for our program. And I'm not telling you what those things are. You've got to decide on your own. You have to walk your own path. You can't live the life that I want you to live. You have to live your own life. Who you are is enough for me, but I'm going to make sure that because we're together, my job is to make you better. And so when you start to give kids trust and show them that you trust them and give them responsibility and help them start to, and now again, I'm scratching another itch here. This point smacks me every day. And Coach Garrido, another Coach Augieism right here, is that baseball is a way for us to teach them about life and what life is about. And what we would want for our players is that ultimately when it's time for them to make a decision, they have the courage and they have the confidence to act on their own thoughts and ideas. Like, isn't that what you want for every 18-year-old that leaves your program? Isn't that what I would want for every 23-year-old to walk in that job interview and go, you know what? I want this job. Well, why do you want this job? Well, Mr. CEO, I want this job because of this, this, and this. Like, that takes confidence. It takes courage. And that's what you would want for your guys. And so in the course of our program, what I think, you know, what makes sense to me is letting them go be adults. Maybe before they're prepared to be, but that to me is the open door they need to walk through. I can give you the playbook on all the decisions to make. I've just like you can, man, at 38, I can tell you all the plays, but at the same time, thank God no one did that for me, because I had to fall down. I had to, you know, break a nose at a certain point. You had to get hurt to know that I can't walk that path. I got to walk this one, and to look back now and say, I mean, there's a couple things I did that took me away from where I was trying to go. But now that I have that, that's what makes you a well-rounded person. I believe that. I think they crave structure and they wouldn't tell you, but they love discipline. They love to know that there's something in place, but also giving them freedom and showing them that you trust them. I think that's been one of the most impactful things we've done is showing them that, man, we're willing to let you go make decisions on your own. Because ultimately, when you do leave this program, you can call me for advice, but it's you against the world, man. And so you need to have an internship at that before you have to go do it for real. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Okay. Absolutely. Hopefully that. Okay. Just making sure. Hopefully I'm getting that across the right way.
Baseball aside, mm-hmm. because that's really, I mean, I think you'd agree with me. That's the easy part.
Sure.
What is it you're looking for in a recruit?
Oh man. Yeah, again, taking the baseball piece out of it, I think, a guy that fits our program. This is going to sound whatever, man, an understanding of hard work. Right. And that's, again, I think every coach wants that. But when you really cut to the core of that, it's someone that may not understand it, but when it's presented to them, it clicks in terms of, you know, for us, hey, we run our program like a Division I baseball program. So I know you're not playing at Vandy and we're not on TV like Vander. I get all that, but man, we run, you know, the elements inside our program, the system that we have, it'll operate the same way. And so if you came here and this is a hobby for you, I promise you won't last. And it's not because you'll be a bad person. It's just because that it won't match up. This isn't for the hobby. This is for the passionate piece. And so with that comes a work ethic, and you have to have an inherent one, but at the same time, we're going to work one out of you, and we're going to work one through you. And we're going to build that. Look, I got kids right now, you know, a lot of our kids don't live on campus. And so we got guys that are literally getting up, and they've got a, you know, in greater Atlanta, they may have a 30 to 45 minute drive to get to 6:30 weights so that they can lift weights for an hour with our full-time strength coach, take a shower, get dressed, go to class from 8 to 11:30, eat lunch at 11:30, get over to the locker room, hang out with their guys, 1:30 classroom, 2:00 mental game. We're done with training at 5. And maybe they've got to do locker room duty. So they're out of there at 6:30 and then they got to drive 45 minutes back home. If you're not, you know what I'm saying? If it's a hobby, dude, you don't even buy into any of that. If you don't have a work ethic, then you just don't last inside that system. It just weeds you out. And so you've got to be willing to pay the price. And I think it's the one thing that, you know, we've got you know, our program's built for a lot of junior college and Division I transfer type players. And it's tough for a high school kid to crack our lineup. And, you know, and so you've got to be, we've got a high school kid committed here right now that is the perfect blue blood for what we are. It's a hard-nosed kid. It's from a really good family, but he gets work ethic. Like, he's so fired up to get here and start working. Because he knows we're going to make you stronger. We're going to make you bigger. We're going to make you faster. You know, all those things are going to happen based on the way we go about it. And plus our style of play fits his dynamic. But so the work ethic piece is important. I want a kid with leadership, but you know, sometimes a kid without it is fine too. I think it's recognition that all of their personalities make our team. So you have kids that are introverts, you have extroverts, you have kids that are loud and they want all the attention in the room. You got kids that would just rather hang out in the shadows. But I think, you know, the collection of those personalities all bring value. And so I think back to the bigger piece of that would be a person who's confident in who they are. So I know that's a deeper, you know, it may be tough to find, but being confident in who you are, and not that you're a finished product at 18, because, you know, thank God I'm not at 38. I'm trying to improve every day. But man, a person that at 18 knows who they are. They know what they're about. They know where their morals are. They know where their standards are. They have that, you know, maturity level. That's huge. But they know who they are, because who they are when they walk in with our group is going to be instantly accepted, because they, you know, our players realize that when we bring somebody in, we've done our homework. And so we believe this person's a great fit. And so they're accepted. The last little thing would be this, and I think it couples with that last point, Dave, is that you can't be scared. The weak and the timid, they can't hang out in our environment. And I'm not saying that's not the case for other situations, but like, just speaking very candidly, at Georgia Gwinnett, man, we've got a target on our back because of how fast we've built a winning program. Our facilities are top notch. We've got, I think people think we have a lot of things given to us, even though we feel like we work really hard to enhance and build. And, but with that comes a target. And so we are very open about that in the front end. Like when we play someone, Dave, we are going to get their best game. You know, we had a really tough game with a program that honestly hasn't won a lot of games here recently. And I assure you, if they would have beat us, they would have dogpiled. And that's what I was trying to help our guys understand, that, hey, that's cool. And it's cool that we figured out a way to win that game. Sometimes you got to go through games like that. There's lessons to be learned, but that is an example of the target that's on us. When people play us, it's just different. And I don't say that in a braggadocious way, I think, but when you're talking about recruiting, that player has to know that before he signs those papers. Like, all right, man, you may not get it, but I'm just telling you, don't show up here if you ain't ready to roll. Because when you get here, it's time to roll. And so, you know what I'm saying? So I think just that confidence piece, but that, oh, that's only going to make me better. If you know, in recruiting, I try to talk about some of that stuff, Dave, with the player, and sometimes if their dad's there, but I try to talk about it, especially in front of the player, and I kind of lean into it because I'm waiting to see, does that player lean in more, or does he sit back in his chair and fold his arms and tell me that, oh, coach, I don't know about that. It kind of scares me. Well, if it scares you, man, it's going to scare you when you get here, because it ain't going away, because there ain't a dude in that locker room right now that's scared of that moment. They want it. Right. And so again, you may not fit if you don't carry that ideal. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. Shifting back to coaching, you know, baseball is unique, and because we play so stinking much.
For sure.
So what advice do you have for coaches and you're new back in the saddle here, but yeah, what advice do you have on dealing with, how do I balance family life and coaching life?
Oh boy. If anybody's got more advice on that, let me know. That was my conversation this morning in the shower. If that tells you how much I'm working through this, you're right, man. I'm back in this saddle, for the first time in 4 years. And now with two kids and obviously a wife, and I've moved everyone away from all of our families. We're out here on our own. It's tough, man. And honestly, here lately, I'm not doing a very good job of, being present. And, you know, we're battling weather, as we talked about before we hit record. Like, I'm going to go ahead and start building the ark, cause I don't know if it's ever going to stop raining here. I'm noticing we're out here in the woods, out here in Swanee, and I'm thinking that there's pairs of animals just waiting for me to get building. And it's wearing me out. I mean, we're on and off with the tarp. We've got weather. I'm trying to manage, you know, we've already lost a couple games. We got, you know, a team that's driving down tonight. We got four games this weekend, and can we play tomorrow? And, you know, I'm trying to build a podcast, and there's a social media responsibility with that. You know, I've got coaches reaching out, and it's all those things that to me are important, because I do the customer service piece of being a coach, of being a podcast host, of carrying the responsibility of being a servant leader inside the coach community. Comes responsibility. And honestly, I'm not doing a great job of, when I come home, of setting the phone down and being there with my kids. And then I catch myself and I go put it away and I go hang out, and it's tough. I think I go back to that point, be present. And it's so easy to say, and it's so hard to do. And I think if you could all go a step back, is marry someone that's willing to keep you in check. And my wife is certainly that person. She will tell me, you're not even listening. You're not even here right now. Put your phone down. Hey, we have some really cool things happening with the family. You need to be here for it. And so having someone in your life that does that, I think, is step number one. Number two is, when you do come home, really work hard at being present and being there for those moments. You know, for us, and we're waiting for the weather to break, I think including your family, that may seem so, you know, super easy. Yeah, my kids come to the game, but I mean, really get your kids out on the field and get your players around your family. I think trying to find a role for your wife, and I'm still trying to figure out what that's going to be for mine. But I also know there's another step there that her and I have both talked about, is especially when the weather breaks and we can sit outside on the deck and do those things, is including the team with our home life. Because we need to blend those two worlds. You know this, we spend more time with our team sometimes than we spend time with our own families. Well, there's also a point you can blend those two worlds, because as much as, you know, Cooper and CJ, man, that's my world. These guys are the other end of my world. And they need to all, number one, know each other, but they need to have time where they are together. And they see me as a father when I am a true father. But then, and more importantly, my kids see that these guys mean a lot to me as well. That's when I'm, when daddy's not here, I'm with these men. And these are faces and these are names, and this is your Uncle Jules. And man, he's going to be your Uncle Jules for the next, you know, 80 years. And that to me, I want to do a much better job. So your question, man, hits me at a pretty vulnerable moment. And when I tell you, I was thinking about it this morning, that was the conversation in my head. I've got to be better at managing this balance. And again, all the excuses I could give you, I gave you, but it's all those things that, man, it's tough. And there's someone out there that's doing a heck of a job with it. And if you've got it and you've written it down, send it to me, because it's something that that I do want to be better at, and I think we owe that to our families to be better at it.
Yeah, absolutely, and you're right; it is tough.
How do you deal with it?
Oh man, well, you know, like you said, it's hard because my kids are in school, and you know, we're playing throughout the week, but especially on Saturday games. I mean, I've got three boys, mm-hmm. and I've got a 10-year-old and twin 8-year-old boys. And so, you know, I try to have them at the field or in the dugout on the bus. We take a spring trip, and for the last 3 or 4 years, my oldest kid has gone with us and stayed with us.
Wow.
Yeah, just trying to make memories. And then, I guess selfishly, you've always got that coach helmet on. And it's, man, that's good for my guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and maybe it's more of a statement about me, and maybe I'm not doing a good enough job with them, but when my sons are around, they're different.
You know, how about that? I love
accountability there, especially with a high school kid. Like they may be 16 years old, but they know there's things that I don't say when the 8-year-old's standing next to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
it's a teachable moment. Obviously it's a moment that I want to enjoy. Because, man, they go by fast.
Mm-hmm. You know,
my family, but at the same time, it's a teachable moment for them. And like you said, you know, if I can be, if they can see me on some level be a good dad, then hopefully on some level that sticks.
Yeah.
For the decade from now when they're dad.
That's right. That's right. Do you guys, and again, it's maybe more difficult on the high school level, do you open your home to your players? Do you do anything?
I did that before I had kids. I haven't done as good of a job of that since I had kids.
Okay.
But you know, I at one point in my career, we did have basically a grill out before the season started.
Mm-hmm. There's something just, there. I don't know what it is yet. I like almost bringing them over in small groups and.
Right.
I desperately need that. I need my wife to see them, because I talk about them so much, and I, you know, my kids need to understand, you know, they see me leave, and Cooper knows I'm going to do baseball, but at the same time, I want him to start to, like you said, piece the puzzle together. I want my players to see who I am as a father, but I want my son and then my daughter to see who I'm working to be for these guys. Right. And I really do. I will pride myself on both those dynamics, because they both mean the world to me. And I think they both, honestly, again, not the baseball coach, more of the life coach. And then obviously the father piece, man, those are the things I'm going to define myself by. Who am I as a father? Who am I in helping these guys be prepared for life? And again, we're still not talking about double play turns here. And so I really do. I want to do a better job of blending those two worlds. And so I'm always intrigued by that. You know, again,
I think the master is Corbin.
Yes, he is 100%. Yeah. What isn't he the master at? name 10 things he's not the master at.
I'm just curious if they knocked on his door and said, "Will you be the AD too?"
Oh my gosh. I'm telling you, man, and I think one of the cool things I always take from him is his humility. Absolutely. But I think that's also just what we talked about earlier, man, that's his inherent, he's engineered his DNA in a way that right. He is just in constant learning mode. And it's so admirable because there's a point where he could just rest and just keep, he could do it the same way he did it last year and he'll be fine for the next 5 years. But in his mind, there's a better way. There's a better drill. There's a better way to say it. There's a better, I need to dial this up. I need to do. And that to me is, man, if that dude's constantly learning, and we would all say, you know, he's the next figurehead in college baseball. As we talk about, as I've mentioned Augie a couple times, and you know, those figurehead coaches, that's who he is. And so he has every right. He could be able to just sit back on his hands, and he's not. He's at a constant place of, no, there's a better way. Right. You know,
right.
It's really cool.
Well, I mean, you know, I'll throw my pastor hat on again. And if you, you know, in John, I think it's John 14, you know, Jesus says, if you abide in me, you will bear fruit.
Mm.
You know, he doesn't say if you sit around and you are constantly trying to bear fruit, that it's going to happen.
Yep.
He says, if you abide in me, it's going to happen. You know, so there comes this point where I think about Corbin. There comes this point to where it's just what he is.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's not trying to make that happen. He's just gotten to a point to where that's just who he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
that's true. That's very true.
And so, you know, we just keep grinding away and hopefully we'll get to that point too sometime.
That's it. Well, he's definitely lighting the path. You know, I think, as you and I were talking before we got going on this, like you taking the responsibility to put this podcast out is lighting a path for others. And it's the messaging behind it, the mission behind it, the spirit in which it's done, like it lights its own path. And I think, again, I think I go back to, again, talk about the lesson from Proverbs. I think it's just recognition that if you're willing to stay vulnerable, and if you're willing to be open, man, everyone can bring value into your life. And so it's not always the person you're looking for, but it's the conversation, or it's the moment, it's the happening, it's the circumstance that shows you something that'll make you better. And so I'm trying to ingrain that in my DNA, and more importantly, inside my thoughts every day, that there's something today that's going to happen that's going to make me better. Something's going to be said. There's going to be a moment, a phone call, a text, and I got to be open to all of it, because there's people in my life for a reason. These people are here, or reaching out for a reason. There's something there that's going to make me better.
Right. There's no such thing as coincidence.
I don't believe in it, man. I really don't.
Yeah.
I truly don't.
Just two questions for you,
and
I'll let you hear. But what, anything else you want to say, you know, just to young coaches?
Oh, to young ones. Oh boy. you know, Billy said yesterday, you know, go get a real job. but bless your heart. If I'll say this, if you feel drawn to coach, you've got to, as you talked about earlier, your coaching, why you've got to really define and hold on to and embrace what that is. Like what is motivating you to get into coaching on an entry level as a young coach, probably at a place where you possibly are not getting paid. You're sacrificing time away from family and friends. At times, at certain situations, it's thankless. It's long hours. It's, you know, why are you feeling drawn to this? And then I think the minute you start to answer that question as a young coach, if you can try to keep working down on the layers, ask yourself that question three times. Why, and why? Well, why am I coaching? But then why am I really doing that? And then why am I doing it? And I think once you get to that gold that's there as to what is really at its core, you know, feeling the tug to do this, hold on to it. Because I've watched, you know, Butch has got a great line that, you know, when you watch young coaches get burned out, you got to wonder, were you ever really on fire to begin with? And I think at times a young coach gets into coaching to be called coach, and, you know, or they don't really know what their path is, or they don't really know why they're there. I think as older coaches, and I'll put myself in that category, I think we've got to help younger coaches work at defining what those things are so that they can hold on to it. And so they can catch fire and stay on fire. You know, and again, this goes back to what's been my personal struggle as a young coach, just really work to embrace the fact that, look, if you spent time with really smart coaches, almost all of them will tell you that in the first part of their career, they were about themselves. They were about plotting their course. They were about recognition. They were about credit. They were about all these things. And then at some point in their career, their life, it all clicked and it was all about the players. And I think as a young coach, if you can keep your focus on the players, and you may not truly understand the depths of servant leadership, of what it really means to lose yourself in the service of other people, you may not understand what the true feeling of vicarious joy in a player's success, of what that feels like as a coach. But I can assure you that the minute you taste it, you'll know the difference. You'll know that we are so insignificant to the game. And I laugh with our kids, my kids all the time, the dugout. They're so much better without me. Like on my play card, I have written, get out of their way. Because there's this point where you really can buy in as a coach that you're super important and you're just not. As an umpire, you can buy in that you're really important and you're just not. It is not about any adult on that field. It is always about these kids. They're playing the game. They're throwing the baseball. They're hitting it. They're fielding it. They're throwing it. And so keeping it about them. And so the spirit in which you coach, or you find those moments to go talk, you've got to keep it about them. It's not about you getting angry and getting it off your chest so that you can walk away and feel better. You've got to be calm and meeting them where they're at, and then finding a way to deliver the message that's going to make them better. They're going to understand where you're coming from, maybe where they had success, maybe where they had failure. And the spirit in which you do it is one that's going to propel them forward. So keep it about the players. And the last thing I'll say is this, man. I mentioned this earlier, and I'm really, to me, it's laughable at where I was 6 years ago, let alone, you know, 16. It's just a game. Like, I love it. And the game's not important. And I'm saying that to a true baseball guy on the other end of the call. The game's not important. What's important is what the game does for us. The game is insignificant. Like these trophies and chasing championships, and like, if you need that to define what you're doing and who you are, then I'll pray for you tonight. But the game is not important. What's important is what this game gives us as coaches the opportunity to teach. And so my point to that is, man, you must teach things to your players that are much bigger and last longer than their time that they get to wear a glove or put batting gloves on or toe the rubber. You've got to give them ideals. You've got to give them perspective. I think we have to teach them things that will make them a better father and a better husband and a better member of society. As cliche as that may sound, they only play for a limited time. I've got guys on my team that, Dave, I can look them in the eye tomorrow in classroom and say, I love you to death. You have 2.5 months left to play.
Right.
It's coming to an end. But at the same time, when 2.5 months are over, you're going to be 22. And God willing, you're going to live until your 100th birthday. And you now, do the math, have, you know, 88 years. 78 years. You now have 78 years to go about your business and live life. And I think we've got to coach with that in mind. And so I say that never from a place of, dude, I've got these answers and just you're oh so blessed to let me share them. Dude, these are reminders to myself. Like I'm talking out loud. I'm going, you need to adopt these as well, homie. Like you've got to live this life as well. These are reminders for all of us, man. These are things that I think about every single day I'm in the dugout. Things I thought about last night in a really cool game with a really good team. And I'm thinking, hey, man, it's just a game. And it doesn't define us. It means nothing to 100 million years from now when they uncover our bones. Nobody cares who won the game on February 19th. Nobody cares. What they care about is where those kids went in life because of something you said on February 19th. That changed the way they looked at life, that changed the way they looked at the people around them, and hopefully gave them the courage to act on their own ideals, to become who they wanted to become in life. That is what you get defined by as a coach.
Yeah. So I'll let you put a neat little bow right here. You can put a bow on it.
Sure.
How are you doing? What's your ultimate goal as a coach?
Well, yeah, I take all that back. To win a national championship. No. My ultimate goal as a coach, man, to be able to look myself in the mirror when I finally hang these turf shoes up and know that I didn't just talk it, that I walked it. And I'm telling you, I again, getting back in the dugout, as much as I thought I was solidified in some stuff, dude, I still battle my ego every day. You know, again, throw me on a prayer list, man. I battle. It's a devil inside. It really is, man. It's something that took me on a dark path my first 11 years, and it's something that I've worked hard to cage. And at times, it picks the lock, and I've got to every day pray to die to that ego every day and get back to a place of servant leadership and get back to a place of my players are number one. So my ultimate goal is to walk that path every day and live in that space. Again, be myself on a daily basis. My goal as a coach is to never look back and go, man, I tried to coach like somebody else. And I've done that. You model, you do that as a young coach too. You model, you see the people in front of you. You probably coach a lot like your high school coach or your college coach, and that's okay. But there's a point where you just got to be yourself, and it's going to work or it's not. But man, you got to go down swinging on your own terms. And look, at a place like where I coach now, everyone has a thought about who should be in your lineup. The lady that cleans our hallways has an idea about who should be in our lineup. You know what I'm saying? But I will go down burning, or I will go down with rose petals, knowing that I did it my way. And I did it the way with the information I had. And I made it my decision because I've got to be the one looking myself in the mirror, knowing that I was myself on a daily basis. So my ultimate goal is to be true to myself, because I think I owe that to myself. Ultimate goal as a coach is to obviously influence these men and show them a way that's much bigger than baseball. And then again, try to, at the end of the day, be the best version of myself. And whatever that means as a Christian, whatever that means as a father, as a life coach, I think I think that's all you can ask for. And again, didn't talk about one result, because that's the furthest thing from, in my heart of hearts, what really matters. It is truly about the process on a daily basis of getting to where you're trying to go.
Well, Coach, man, this has been a blessing.
Yeah, it's been awesome, dude. I've really enjoyed this conversation. I appreciate you teeing me up and letting me work through some of this stuff. This has been a good workshop, you know, to think through some of this stuff and challenging my heart. Talk about iron sharpening iron, brother. Man, you're right there with me. I really appreciate it.
Well, again, I thank you for your time, and good luck the rest of the way. Hopefully, this at some point, the sun has to come out.
We're well, you know, and hopefully that's tomorrow. It keeps saying this weekend. I'm going to take a picture when I see it. So check Twitter. It'll be on there. But no, thank you, Dave. I appreciate and value what you do. And maybe you don't, hopefully, I hope you hear it a lot, but sometimes we don't hear it enough. But I appreciate and value not only who you are as a person, as a coach, but what you're doing, because what you're doing is affecting people positively. And it is growing the game of baseball. I think more importantly, you're growing people's hearts. And so, man, I really appreciate this opportunity, and thanks for having me on.
Well, I appreciate it, man. And if you need anything ever, just let me know.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thanks again for joining us on the show today. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to the podcast so we can reach as many coaches as possible with a word of encouragement. Never forget, your job is important. God loves you, and He has a plan for you. Continue to build tomorrow's leaders and stand firm in the faith.